live from the WGY studios every Sunday.
This is the Paul Potrat Show.
Stop spraying and praying. You're wasting money.
Millennials aren't lazy. It's how you lead them.
When you sell by price, you die by price.
The Paul Potrat Show, helping your business grow and stay relevant.
Covering the latest technology for business, leadership trends, and changing your mindset on marketing.
Now, your hosts, Paul Potratz, the business architect, and Samantha Zewalinski, the millennial entrepreneur.
Good morning and happy Sunday, Paul. It has been a while since I've seen you.
Good morning, Sam. And I feel very squirrel-like. I mean, just no one can see what I'm doing but you. But yeah.
Well, you're doing a video.
Doing a video on Instagram. So here we go. Yep. All right. So I'll end that. So, yep.
It's been a while because you've been on vacation.
Yeah, I decided it was time to take a little trip.
A little breather,
do something fun, do something different. And so that's what I did.
What'd you do?
I went to Rhode Island and toured the mansions, looked at the mansions, did a lot of driving because we went from one end to the other end, back to the end and all that
so
fun stuff.
So you didn't fly anywhere?
Nope. And I think you know that if I can avoid flying, I will avoid flying. And it's not that I'm scared of the flight, you know, scared of crashing or anything like that. It's just the hustle of it all. Then you have to go through the airport and go through security and, you know, get on the plane and maybe get the beat down and all that good stuff. So, yeah.
We'll give you some good video for your Instagram page, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Other than that, we're not really interested.
No. Because, I mean, it would be hard for me to hold my phone and also get beat on at the same time. So, yeah. No, not
that. I have
to
tell you,
happen.
All the time that you've been flying, I don't see you as making a ruckus anywhere.
No, I'm pretty even keel, just whatever. But you think about that. I mean, for example, like, you know, the TSA agents, that's a hard job. I would not want to sign up for that. I don't care what they're paying. I would not want to do that. I mean, you fly all the time, and think about that. I mean, how many times have you gone through TSA and not seen somebody that had a personality flaring or was a little upset? I mean, have you ever been through TSA and everybody was just happy as could be? I mean, TSA side.
Maybe when there's like three people near me, but that's few and far between. Maybe a couple times at the Albany airport, but it seems like everybody's flipping out all the time.
Right. Yeah. Flipping out.
Angry. You're making me take my toiletries out.
Yeah. Mad at the world, and even getting
just like an aggressive situation, really.
Yeah. And getting on the plane too. And then you get on the plane and it's the same thing. And it's, you know, if you fly, you know, one of the airlines like Southwest where they don't have assigned seats.
Oh my gosh. The last flight I was on, I was like, didn't you know what you signed up for? Some guy walking up and down the aisles, huffing and puffing that he couldn't sit with his wife. You bought this ticket. Did you not know what you signed up for?
Well, what I like the best, I don't like it, but it's like you're getting on the plane and people are sitting there and they won't make eye contact with you. They'll be like sitting on the, you know, near the window or sitting
totally
near the
guilty.
Yeah.
I'm too busy. I can't move all my stuff. You can't sit next to me in this middle seat.
And you figure, okay, if I don't make eye contact, they'll keep on going.
But you're better off picking out who you want to make eye contact with so you get like at least a good buddy for the flight.
You smile really big. Hey, sit here.
Hey, you look familiar.
Yeah. So there you go. So yeah, you're not eating chicken wings. So why don't you sit here?
Or onions and eggs. Somebody, I don't know. There should be rules about what you can bring on a flight for sensory reasons.
What'd you have for breakfast this morning, squirrel?
I had Oreos.
All right, good.
I think I already mentioned that to you. I was hungry on the run, had to get here.
Oreos for breakfast. So
Breakfast of champions.
Yep. Okay, great.
But I think we were kind of talking and you mentioned that you like to drive because you don't like to deal with TSA and that whole ordeal.
Yeah. And it's not that I like, again, the TSA, I mean, hat off to them, the job that they do. But you think about what's happened, why it's causing, and I think that's perfect for today's topic that we're going to talk about. What is happening behind that? I mean, there's this really interesting dynamic that's caused all of this. And this type of dynamic not only happens when you're flying and you're going through TSA, but it also happens in your workplace. It also happens at home. It happens everywhere. And it started in the Stone Ages and it's continued on to today. And it has to do with, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Saber-toothed tigers.
So we're going to talk about fight or flight on today's episode and how that really translates into your workplace. But you mentioned saber-toothed tigers. This is something that's been ingrained in humanity forever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it goes much deeper than that. I mean, it really is factual that we have, there's two of them. There's two glands in our body called, it's the adrenal glands. Mm-hmm. There's two of them. And what they do is they will put off, you know, more or less the hormones in your body, adrenaline, and that drives the fight or flight. And years ago, you know, in the Stone Ages, what, you want to tell the story of what would happen in the Stone Ages? Why don't you tell that?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, if you think back to even the Stone Ages, the caveman era, you know, you would hear, for example, like a rustling in the bush as you were walking through, you know, wherever you were walking, and you instantly thought it was some sort of predator.
Right.
You know, you had your defense up. You had to be aware of everything 24/7, and you had a physical response to it. You either stayed and fought, which depending on the situation may not have been the best idea.
Right.
Or you were a flight and you fleed this situation to maybe kind of try and save your butt in the process. And so this has been something that's been ingrained with us, and we use it as a reaction to different situations. And one thing I think that's really, really interesting about this is it only takes a fifth of a second for your brain to perceive a potential threat and react. Can you believe that?
And again, it's from the, you know, that you use, it's like a hormone that starts pumping that, you know, with the adrenal gland. And you think about, am I going to run or am I going to fight the saber-toothed tiger? And that's even today. I mean, we still have saber-toothed tigers we have to deal with, but it's not, you know, those with the big teeth. It's, you know, going through TSA. And, you know, because you kind of think about the whole premise of what it is, that TSA is there because we've had, you know, terrorists, we've had bombings, we've had this. I mean, it's been some time since that's happened, but there's the fear mode. So you're on guard. Am I going to fight or am I going to run? And, you know, if you run, you're going to get the beat down. So, you know, are you going to fight? So everything's on edge, and that's what's happening. And now, you know, the TSA agents, one, people just don't like to be, you know, you don't like
to be told. Well, people don't want to be told what to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's part of it. Don't like that. But then it's also when you go, you think about when you're flying. I mean, even though you've been flying a number of years, you still have that anxiety that builds up that puts you on edge. And that happens everything. I mean, if you go to buy a car as a consumer, you have that anxiety because you feel like, hey, there's saber-toothed tigers there trying to take my money. I mean, and it's in everything. And then you might work in the workplace environment that you have that boss that wants to manage with fear. So every day you go in, you know, you can't punch your boss in the nose. Well, I guess you could, but, you know, what's the payoff on that? And you can't run. So you kind of think about, you know, driving to work, you're in rush hour traffic. What can you do? You're stuck. So that's our modern day saber-toothed tigers.
Well, and it happens to us in different work environments all of the time. And, you know, you can also think about it. It really correlates back to stress these days. And that's kind of the modern equivalent to it. I know, for example, American psychologist Walter Cannon really coined this in the 1920s about how it adapts to modern life. And for us, we deal with it every day in social situations, but really professional ones. You know, whether you fight, flee, but it's really flee. And then I'd even throw another one out there. Do you freeze?
Right.
So, you know, that's not how we commonly refer to fight or flight mode, but that is a response that a lot of people have as well. Do you just freeze? I mean, some people think the problem's going to go away or they're just acting like a deer in headlights during the situation, but that's a possible response as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about that. So if think about that for a moment, let's just say that you're the work environment and you don't deal with situations that well, I mean, uncomfortable situations. Are you the type of individual that you're going to fight? In other words, you're going to, you know, get aggressive, get mouthy, get confrontational, or you're going to run? You're probably not going to run. Or are you going to freeze? And if you freeze, then that person that you're having that confrontation with, A, can look at that as weakness. B, might even get more agitated because why are they not answering me? And that's just a reaction mechanism. And I mean, there's other reaction mechanisms too when someone's being dealt with the modern day saber-toothed tiger. I mean, what's another reaction that you can think of?
Well, one that's not in here, I think a lot of the times how people process emotion, so how people process stress or frustration is crying.
Yeah.
I think a lot of women tend to default to that because it's just how do they process their emotions. I tell people all the time, come in my office and if you need to scream, you can scream. Like, I don't need to tell anybody. It's just your moment. That's fine. We know everything's okay. But you need to process that emotion somehow. And a lot of people don't understand how to deal with that if somebody's crying.
So I'm going to come into your office tomorrow.
And scream?
And cry.
Or cry.
I don't know, whichever.
Okay, surprise me.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. Do one of them. So there you go.
Surprise me. But it's really a cause of stress in the workplace. And according to Northwestern National Life, 40% of workers say their job is either very or extremely stressful. And according to the Family and Work Institute, they found that 26% of workers are often burned out or stressed by their work. So this is something that's happening in a large percentage of workplace either found by management can understand it or individuals are showing these fight, flight, freeze responses, and they're having to deal with it. So it's a bigger issue.
Yeah. One, and as a manager, as a supervisor, as a leader, as a business owner, whatever it is, you should really be aware of that. I mean, what are you doing? How do you interact with your team? And I know over the years, the places that I've worked, that and every day that I came in, every morning, I was wondering, am I going to get fired today? And mm-hmm. It wasn't because I wasn't working, because I was definitely working. I was hitting my numbers. I was hitting my sales goals. I was surpassing my sales goals. But I was scared, am I going to get fired mm-hmm. this morning when I show up? Then I was scared. I mean, I wouldn't say scared, but I was scared. If I went to lunch, which I hardly ever took lunch because one company I worked for, they were notorious that when you would come back from lunch, they'd let you go. So I would never take lunch because I figured if I didn't leave, and then at the end of the day. So you create that as a manager ruling by fear, mm-hmm. and you have to be very conscious of this because on your brain, there's, you know, the right hand, left hand brain. The one part of your brain is fear. The other part of your brain is creativity and thinking. Mm-hmm. So if your team is not, if you're really lacking productivity or if productivity's gone down, if you've had a change within your company, in other words, a new manager and productivity's gone down, you need to look at that manager and see, is that manager ruling by fear? And I mean, and you have to look in the mirror. Are you ruling by fear? And if mm-hmm. so, then you're having to hire more people and bring more people in to do a job that could be done with fewer people because you're instilling that fear, which is people are concerned about their job and either they're going to be put their head down and be lower productivity because they're scared mm-hmm. and they're thinking about it all the time, or they're going to look for another job, or, you know, it's not a good work environment. It's going to create that internal chaos.
It's about understanding what's creating that chaos, right? Yeah. So it can be a lot of different things. It can be, you know, interpersonal relationships in the office. It can be the management style, like you just mentioned, of whomever's working with that team of individuals. It can be maybe they feel like they have uncertain expectations or too many responsibilities being given to them, too many roles that they're being asked to fulfill. Their careers are uncertain, kind of like you mentioned, but also that can be translated to where we talk about growth a lot. What is the growth plan of that team member? If they don't see that, they may be more often fleeing a situation because they don't feel like there's a future for them. So they're responding to that need to have stability in their life.
Right.
And there, you know, I think there's a ton of different things, but in order to understand that, you can look at environmental factors, depending on what kind of industry you're in. You know, are your working conditions really great? Is your team appreciating those or benefiting from those? And those can all be things that people have to cope with and deal with that either do or don't cause stress.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many factors could be fighting this. And it, again, it started back from the Stone Ages, which is kind of weird that we had to get away from the saber-toothed tiger. But we have a lot of saber-toothed tigers today. Mm-hmm. And to be more productive, I mean, as an individual, I mean, let's say that you work for a company. Mm-hmm. If you're working for a company and the manager rules by fear, then you need to make the decision. Are you going to stay there or are you going to go somewhere else? And if you're a manager that rules by fear, that's not going to work so well. I mean, it might have worked well for you, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but it's definitely not going to work. And especially the newer workforce that's coming on. I mean, I'm going to say it, but with the millennials and it I think it makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think it's also important if you understand your management style and understand the team that you're working with, you can understand, does that communicate effectively with them and the need to change? And that's what it is. And if you're a positive person or you're more of a pessimistic person, did you know that they actually have found scientifically that you can change that? So if you're more of a negative person and a little bit more of a pessimist, you're more likely to be somebody who flees the situation. If you're an optimist, you're more than likely to be somebody who stays and fights in a situation. I'm not really sure where freeze falls on that spectrum, probably a little bit in the middle.
Well, you just brought up an interesting topic, though. So you kind of think about that. I mean, mm-hmm. have you ever met anybody that prides themselves on being, you know, confrontational, being difficult, being where they wear the little necklace that starts with a B and ends with an H? You know, have you ever seen people do that?
Yeah.
And they pride themselves on being confrontational. They pride themselves
on being aggressor.
Yeah, being mm-hmm. aggressive. So would that individual make a good entrepreneur? Would that individual make a good employee?
You have to ask that question to yourself and think about the organization's needs.
Yeah. But, you know, again, I've seen many of people that are like, I am 100% pure, you know what? And mm-hmm. it's like, really? Come on. You know, let's not be that way. Because it doesn't help anyone. And it brings me squirrel. Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
Do I have time for a squirrel?
Sure.
Okay, good.
It's your show, Paul.
No. Sam, it's you. I'm here for you.
I'll bring you back around.
Okay, good. So Christy and I, we stopped at this restaurant on the mm-hmm. way to Newport, Rhode Island.
Okay.
And we're ready to have this nice, peaceful dinner, you know, a little cafe, glass of wine.
Cute little restaurant, end of the night.
Yeah. Exactly. The sun's starting to set. It's really pretty. The sky's a beautiful. Am I painting a picture?
Yeah, but I feel like something's happening. Like, you're painting me this beautiful picture. What happened?
These two women come in, mm-hmm. and they sit at the table right beside us.
Okay.
And they were so loud.
So there goes relaxing evening.
Yeah, really. And I have a term for this, and mm-hmm. I shouldn't say it, but I'm going to say it. They were in New Jersey.
Do you need me to dump, press the dump button?
No. But they were just loud. They wanted everyone mm-hmm. to hear their conversation, is what it felt like, that they talk so okay. loud. And I mean, when Christy and I go to a restaurant, you cannot hear us because we are having an intimate conversation. Mm-hmm. And we could be talking about the dogs, mowing the yard, whatever.
But you're just having a conversation between yourselves.
Exactly.
Having a nice, you know, time together.
But these two women had no proper upraising, and they wanted everybody to hear the conversation. And all it was a negative session that they complained about this person and that person and this person and that person nonstop. And what happened is I noticed I started eating faster. I started sitting closer to the table. I actually had a reaction to it, and so did Christy, because we're just very, hey, you know, peace, love, mm-hmm. harmony, that type of, but it caused that type of reaction with us, and we don't even know these women. So you think about, what is it doing for them? What is it doing for their health? And they thought that they were, you know, whatever, that was engaging conversation. I don't know what they thought, but it creates that fight or flight mode.
So I think that's really interesting, though, because so you were saying, like, at the restaurant, they basically made you want to flee.
Yeah.
Like, their actions impressed their response by your physical nature.
Exactly.
And then you reacted to that. And that reaction was you wanted to flee the situation because it was unconducive to a nice meal, a relaxing environment.
Yeah. And I mean, in fact, it's funny you'd say that, because Christy said, well, do you want to ask the waiter if we can move? Because we were going to move on the other side of the mm-hmm. little courtyard, so we didn't have to listen to these two negative women that want everybody to hear the conversation. And I was like, no, you know, why should we have to pick up all of our stuff and move? And I've been known to get to just maximum mm-hmm. to where the point that I will fight. And I almost did it. And Christy's like, no. That I almost turned around and said, ladies, do you mind? You know, mm-hmm. we're trying to have a peaceful dinner here. A, I don't need to hear your conversation, and B, I don't need to hear all your negativity. But I didn't do it because I know it makes Christy very uncomfortable. So
that's really interesting, too, because, and I mean, this, I think, kind of brings us back to our point, also thinking about the environment you're creating in a workplace or a social situation and how you influence each other and are influenced by people around you, because you wanted to fight to some extent.
Yes.
But you chose to flee the situation due to the individual you were with as well, and understanding their personal
behaviors
and desires.
Well, what I really did is I froze.
Because you stayed there.
I stayed there. we just, you know, we ate a little faster, drank the wine a little quicker.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, let's get out of here. Let's get back into the car and, you know, go to the beach now. So whatever. So that's what happens at your work environment. Do you have individuals that are that type of individual? And think about how it affects everyone else in the work environment. And if you are that individual, I mean, what quality of life is that? Because you're pumping these hormones. I don't know if hormones is the right word. Let's say chemicals. You're mm-hmm. pumping these chemicals through your body that there's been studies, and I'm sure you mm-hmm. know about some of the studies that have been done of how it will affect, I mean, so many things. It causes headaches. It causes heart disease. It can cause cancer. I mean,
stomach problems. All that fun stuff. Stress gives you a physical reaction over a long period of time.
Yeah.
So it really does impact your health.
I agree.
Not
100%.
Just mental, but also physical.
Yeah.
And that's why people actually have physical reactions, like maybe crying, like we talked about earlier. It's a physical response to the situation that they're being put in.
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of situations where people in the workplace have to deal with that, and a lot of different ways that we can try and understand and overcome those responses, aside from programmed responses, because past behavior shapes our future behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of things is understanding your triggers as an individual. And this is something anybody in this situation could do socially or professionally, understanding what your triggers are and giving yourself a moment to process. Because you can condition yourself not always to flee a situation or not always to fight a situation, but you have to understand that you're in it
right.
to make a change.
Yeah. So you mentioned something a minute ago, though. That you said that a person can change, that in other words, if they're that individual, that they can change the entire thought process or everything, whether the fight or, you know, fight or flight. And again, there's some individuals that are predisposed, is what you were saying, that they're always into that fight mode, but you can change it to not be that type of person.
Yeah. So essentially your past experience condition you to have a pattern of behavior, and a negative pattern can be known, for example, as a learned helplessness. And that would be commonly referred to as either the flee and probably also the freeze mode, depending on the next reaction thereafter. But it's considered learned helplessness because you're not doing anything to either change that pattern or, you know, understand the situation and move past it. So it's also for example, a recognition of avoidance in a lot of situations. It's avoiding the problem at hand and not hitting it head on.
So you kind of think about it, you're stuck in traffic. Traffic's really backed up, and a lot of people, you know, you're going to be late for an appointment, and you could go into that fight because you can't flight, because you can't really run unless you have the opportunity to make the quick U-turn and try to race up some back streets and everything else. But that's the same thing. And you think about that how does that affect your body? I mean, when you start to see traffic backed up, I mean, and I'm asking you, Samantha, when you're coming up on traffic that's backed up, what is the feeling that goes, do you have a feeling?
Well, usually you're frustrated. I mean, depending on where I am, like we were coming to the station the other day and there's traffic out front and I don't come up here very often. And I was like, oh goodness, I'm supposed to be there in 10 minutes. So of course I get anxious and I get worried about what's going to happen. And I try and come up with an alternative plan, but I don't know where I am, to be completely honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you pull up Google Maps. Yes, I know you're not supposed to use your phone. Don't tattletale on me, guys. And see if there's another alternative, but you're initially frustrated or anxious because you're going somewhere and chances are you got to be there at a certain time.
And then it creates like a grouchy mode.
It can influence the rest of your day.
Exactly.
It's kind of like I try and remind myself sometimes, don't sweat the small stuff, because in the grander scale, where does it actually fall in terms of influence?
Yeah. Can you change it? Can you really change it? If you can't change it, just deal with it. Just let it roll off. Be peaceful. Just whatever. I mean, there's other things. Think about happy things. Turn the radio on.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to our show. You have to just deal with it and let it go.
So I think there's a lot of situations, though, where people are deciding in a professional way, should they fight or should they be a flight and flee the situation? And sometimes it has to do with, you know, you mentioned earlier, like a manager that rules on fear. Is that a good environment for you? Do you see yourself flourishing in it? So when weighing this decision, whether it's personal or professional, here is a tidbit on what you can do. Do you know where I'm going to go with this?
No, but I'm waiting.
So I am am a paper person. If you've seen the pictures Paul shares on Instagram, I have about 80 pieces of printed paper in front of me right now. But make a list. So a lot of the time we're dealing with a specific situation that we need to weigh the pros and cons of. So when you're thinking about should you flight and flee or should you fight, we don't want to freeze. It's not a great example. List out what your dilemma is, your situation you're trying to make a decision on. And then write out all of the problems in one column and all of the solutions in another, kind of looking at the pros and cons of each of these. And there's going to be different outcomes. That should be your third column. So based on each of these problems and solutions, what are the possible outcomes of the scenario that you're in? And then take a look at that. When you write it down on paper, it's a really good black and white version. Of course, there's a little gray area always, but it'll give you a good opportunity to say, what is for me personally or the best opportunity to move forward. And then this is going to give you a good action item. So you can really say, I'm going to choose to change my actions if I traditionally flee and I see the best positive outcome could be to fight. But so make your pros and cons list, your problems, solutions, and possible outcomes, and really make it a conscious decision. You're going to react in that fifth of a second, but give yourself a little bit of time, especially if it's a long-term decision, like do I be an entrepreneur? Do I punch my boss? You mentioned that earlier. Don't recommend that, not condoned. However, you know, weighing those options out.
I know I've definitely wanted to punch some bosses in the past.
So instead, maybe use that to go to the gym and get a little exercise out. But make your list. And that's what we talked about this morning on the Paul Pojat Show. Should you fight or should you flee a situation and what that means for both you as a manager and you as an employee in a business. So we're going to take a quick break for the news. But when we come back, we'll be heading into the business breakdown.
It's time for the business breakdown.
The 7-minute on-air consultation for you.
Call now for your free business consultation with Paul and Samantha. 1-855-POTRATS.
That's 1-855-768-7289.
Now, let's break it down.
You know the drill. Every week we take three listeners live on air and talk about their business questions. Whether you're a business owner, manager, or looking to grow in your career, give us a call at 855-POTRATS. That's 855-POTRATZ to talk to Paul about your business question. And for the business breakdown today, we have Sarah on the line as our first caller of the day. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for calling Paul in the business breakdown. What is your question and where are you calling from this morning?
Yeah, so I'm calling from Special Olympics, New York, so I'm in the nonprofit industry, and I'm always looking for new ways of engaging our sponsors that not only benefits our athletes, but also the corporate sponsors that support us. And so this is my question. What is the best way to communicate with a corporate partner that their investment has value and shows that their contribution is appreciated?
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hey. So I don't think this would be a monetary play. You know, a lot of times sponsorships, a business owner wants to know, how's it going to help me drive more business? So, you know, drive more opportunities that way. So I definitely don't see it as a monetary. I definitely see it as, how did they help the Special Olympics athletes? And I guess what I would be doing, the way I would do it, is instead of, you know, trying to communicate with them one big time after they do the sponsorship and overloading them with information, I would break it up over the course. I mean, I'm trying to think how I could explain that, but over the course of, you know, that they're a sponsor, you guys are doing the Olympics, you're doing all of these things. So I would make it much more organic, that it feels like it's, you know, a one-to-one communication instead of like a mass media to them, but break it up showing, you know, for that, let me think how I'd word that more or less. For your contribution, you were able to allow Tommy to do blank. For your contribution, you were able to allow Sally to do blank. And it would be short video clips and showing the athletes having a great time and, you know, basically feeling very fulfilled. Does that make sense what I'm saying, where I'm going with this?
Yes, it does. This is something that we always think about. Is it a framed certificate of appreciation? Is it a phone call? Do we send baked goods? What about a visit from an athlete, a annual report?
Yeah.
You know, certain things like that. And we put together what's called a media report, and it's a very lengthy book. It's very chunky, and it does cost money. It costs money to put together. It's staff time. It costs money to ship these out. And is that something that a corporate sponsor even looks at or values? appreciate.
And the answer to that, in my humble opinion here, is no. Because as a business owner, as a sponsor, you know, being a business owner, you're constantly dealing with the next thing for your business. So that comes in, you're really not going to have the time to sit down and go through it. And that's where I really feel it much more organic, because a sponsor sponsoring it because of the Special Olympics, because of the individuals that make it special that are in the Special Olympics, they're thinking about, those children, those adults in the Special Olympics. And I think it would be much more beneficial. It would be much more memorable as something as simple as a quick iPhone video or some type of video that's very organic of one of the athletes doing something, whether it's, running a track and field event, whether it's them playing soccer, and even have, ask if the athlete is willing to it, just to say, thank you for sponsoring this. You've given us the opportunity. And just those short videos that, a minute long, 2 minutes, 3 minutes long, not a produced video, an organic video going to those sponsors would go so much further. It would be so much more cost effective. And if you did that, I would be willing to bet money that your sponsorship would go up.
Oh, that's great advice. That's doable. It doesn't cost much. It's heartfelt, and it doesn't take a lot of time.
It's how Paul always talks about telling a story. So you're telling the story of what their donations allowed you as an organization to be able to do for the athletes, and then they're telling the story for you. So it's utilizing all of your assets in a really easy, marketable approach compared to that big asset book you put together every year.
And you just think about it. The big asset book that you put together, it goes to that sponsor. How does it have any shelf life, and how does it have any awareness? And if you're doing these videos, you're able to share these videos on YouTube, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, and so on and so forth. So now a lot of other individuals can partake in this, see it, and that's going to create free advertising for you and create more sponsorship opportunities.
And maybe different levels of sponsorship allow them to support a different number of athletes. Maybe you already have that planned, or you can build that into it, and then you can give them video or photography assets that show, hey, these are the amount of Special Olympic athletes we've been able to support over the years, and they can take that to help market how they've been a part of the community and built their grassroots initiative, because that's essentially what businesses are investing in with your organization.
Yeah, and you think about it, a lot of times, business owners, when we do something, if we sponsor something or we do something, that company says, oh, hey, we're going to do a press release, or the company that did the sponsorship will do a press release, but that takes time. And the reason that they're doing it, they're wanting to show that they're giving back to the community. So if you're doing these videos, it's so easy, so quick for them to save these videos or, put them on their Facebook page. By all means, I would encourage them to do it. Now they're showing that they're being part of the community, they're giving back. But just think about how their competitors and people that follow them on Facebook can see what they're doing, and then they're going to want to do it. In other words, they're going to want to follow suit to the same way. Oh, well, they're doing it, I need to do it.
We can even brand the video special thanks to blank.
You could
sponsor.
Yeah, and keep it simple. I would not make it a big production here, and I'm telling you that, and we have, a video production team and everything else, but I would not make it a big production. I would do it where it's very organic. The more organic, the more homemade, the better.
Wow, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for your question this morning in the business breakdown.
Have a great one.
All right, thanks, Sarah. Bye-bye.
So maybe you're like Sarah, who needs help with providing value to her investors. You can give us a call at 855-POTRATS or communicate with us three other ways. Visit the Paul Potratz Facebook page, where you can start the conversation there, or head over to paulpotratz.com, where you can view our resources, fill out a form, and schedule your one-on-one consultation, whether it be on air or off. But for now, we have our next caller, Randy. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling into the Paul Potratz Show. I heard you have a question for Paul this morning.
I do. Do you think the salespeople are as good today as they were 20 years ago? And if not, what can they do to improve their abilities?
Okay. Randy, thanks for calling. That's a difficult one in a sense, because right now I'm back into the mode again of looking at real estate, and I'm on the website the wee hours of the night. And so I'm sending in inquiries on different properties that I'm seeing. And so I was, and I've done this. I mean, I've done this several times. I've done it on shopping for cars. I've done it on real estate, and the list goes on. But I sent in, I think it was 11 inquiries. And out of the 11 inquiries, take a guess how many people got back to me.
Probably one.
Exactly, one. And it's really amazing because the one that got back to me, because it, again, it was late. It was, I don't know, 12 o'clock, you know, midnight, 1 a.m., something like that. And I had a text message that came in like 5 minutes after I sent it, close to 1 a.m. in the morning. And it was that one real estate agent. So it was pretty surprising. So you think about that, one out of 11. And it kind of made me think, I kind of chuckled because I really like to read. And there's this book that I've read several times, and it's a really old book that was written back in the 1940s, well before my time.
Sure.
But, and it said that salesmanship died somewhere around 1943. And that's kind of weird. But so I kind of think about that, though, too. And they go on to explain it. But think about that today. I mean, how many, you know, individuals are saying, I'm going to go into a career of sales. That's what I want to do for a living, is I want to sell. I want to be a salesperson. And I don't think there's many people that choose that as a career destination. And I think a lot of times what's happened is we've, you know, or a number of individuals have classified sales as a negative connotation, that it's not a really good chosen profession, even though you can make a lot of money in sales. So I think that's what's really, you know, caused that individuals haven't chosen sales as the profession. They've just said, well, I haven't been able to get a job here or there or whatever it is. So they've gone into sales, and it's not what they've chosen to do. And so therefore, they're not really aggressive. They're not really trying to hone their craft, get better. They're not motivated because it's not what they're passionate about. So to answer your question, has sales changed in the last 20 years? I think most definitely it has, because there's fewer and fewer people choosing to go down the sales path. And I think there's also a factor, too, that with social media, that we see so many individuals with a tremendous amount of success. And we just, you know, we see it on Instagram, we see it on Facebook, and we don't see the hard work it went into it. So someone gets into sales, they don't have immediate success, and they lose that motivation again. I hope that all made sense.
Absolutely, it does. The one thing you were talking about, one person actually contacted you of the 11, I was in a similar situation where I had someone, I was in the car business, and they were trying to buy a Ford Explorer on the A-plan. It pays you $150.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this lady called me. I called her back, said, hey, I found it in another state. I'll get it for you. When she called back, she said, I want you to know something. We won the Powerball, but we didn't tell the eight people we called in Louisville. I was working outside of Louisville at the time. And she said, we're coming in to buy a vehicle from you. Also, we're going to buy a second vehicle. And I said, what do you mean, ma'am? She says, my daughter needs a vehicle, but we're going to buy two from you, Randy, because she took the effort to call me back.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing to improve, you know, your sales. It's really easy. Just have follow-up. And I think that's, you know, even if you're not in sales, I don't think a lot of people really have follow-up. They, you know, and I always had this sales manager always told me, make your plan, work your plan. And I think that's where a lot of people fall short.
Well, and what you figured out, Randy, was the way that that person preferred to communicate. And I think one thing that's changed, to Paul's point, not just in sales, but in any industry, is we need to communicate how our clients want to communicate. So whether that's text messages, through direct messenger on social platforms, email, you know, or over the phone, we need to do that to really capitalize on that conversation and that sale.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And Randy, I just did a video that just this past week that's on my Facebook page. I don't know if you've seen it, where I talk about, if you're a salesperson, you'll want to watch this. And it's about a 10-minute video. Have you seen that by chance?
I have not yet, but I watched today, sir.
Yeah, check that out, because what I'm doing is I'm meeting with our account managers, and what our account managers do more or less is we're constantly working with our clients, and it's so much more than marketing. It's consulting and saying, here's your opportunities for more sales. And I talk about what makes a good salesperson or what's perceived to make a good salesperson and where, you know, salespeople, I mean, you're in the role, you might as well do a great job, you know, to salespeople that are listening. And I talk about the biggest mistake that salespeople are making today based on the way individuals communicate. So, I mean, watch that video, and I'd love your input on it to tell me what you think about the video, if I'm on spot or if I'm wrong.
Absolutely. That's one thing I noticed in training. A lot of times when I would talk to my sales class, I would say, what do you think people are looking for when they come out today? And they would look for great value. They're looking for this, looking for that. I said, no, they're looking for a salesperson, you know, and get them excited.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I always told them, take a checkup from the neck up. Before you start your day every morning, when you look in the mirror, you're brushing your teeth and shaving. Think about the positivity you're going to have and the positive outlay you're going to have for your family and the things you're going to say and things you're going to do. And think about your day and plan your success. Think about your success before you leave your house.
Randy, I love that last comment you're leaving with us with. Be excited about what you do and have a plan and work your plan. But that is all we have time for in your segment of the Business Breakdown. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Randy.
Absolutely. It was certainly a pleasure to speak with both of you.
All right. Thank you. Have an awesome day.
So I loved that tidbit that Randy left us with, but one thing you mentioned, Paul, was on Facebook, everybody can head over there and the Paul Potratz Facebook page and find what everyone in sales needs to know. And you can watch that 10-minute video and leave us a comment and let us know what you think a salesperson should know and take into account these days. But next we have somebody who wrote into us via our Facebook and email that we previously promoted in our show, which is paulpotratz@ppadb if you want to be part of our mentor circle. And so Megan was asking us, how do I get started? She keeps second guessing herself and she can't start because she keeps stopping. And I feel like this is a really great question that we should address, because I'm sure a lot of individuals who are thinking about ideas for their business, creating a business or growing one, find that they're paralyzed by that first step.
I think it's so, I mean, I even went through that, you know, years ago. I wanted to have an advertising agency. I wanted it so bad, but fear is what held me back.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept on procrastinating. And then Christy kept on saying, you just have to do it. You just have to do it. But I just didn't feel the time was right. I didn't have enough money in the bank. I didn't have enough know-how. I didn't have enough knowledge. I didn't have enough contacts. I had so many of these. I don't have enough. And so I kept on procrastinating. And you kind of think about that. I mean, where would we be today if I would have started earlier?
Well, we wouldn't be together on this conversation. Maybe you'd be farther along if you started earlier. But if you didn't, if you kept stopping.
Right, exactly. So we wouldn't be together, or we would be together and we'd all be driving Rolls Royces.
You never know.
Yeah, exactly. If I would have started earlier. But it's so true. I mean, you think about that. So. And, you know, I don't think, you know, one thing led to another. And what I started doing is I was doing the business on the side. I was doing the advertising agency on the side. Kristen, sorry. Thank you. You know, but so I was doing it on the side. And then finally, because I worked, you know, for Clear Channel, mm-hmm. iHeart. So I was working here, not in this office, their other office. But I had an advertising agency on the side. And then Kristen Delaney from iHeart found out and she fired me. So that was a beautiful thing. That was a wonderful thing, because mm-hmm. that forced me to do it. So my word of advice is do it on the side. And if you're, you know, having success and you see that there's more opportunities out there that you can really make this a viable business, then you just have to make that leap of faith, because life is really short. I mean, really, really short. And I mean, I know I sound like a grandfather talking, but you don't seem to realize how short it is until you get it. It's like 45. When you hit 45, you realize how short it is. Mm-hmm. So here's something that I want you to do, Samantha, and something I want everybody else to do.
Okay.
Are you ready? I want you to go to YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and I want you to search for Jelly Bean Life.
That's a new one. I haven't heard of that before.
Okay. Have you never seen this video?
I don't think so.
All right. So definitely, I hopefully it's going to come up, but just go and search for Jelly Bean Lifespan, maybe is what it mm-hmm. is. And what you will see is somebody took the time to put all of these jelly beans together. And they break it down and they show you how much time you spend commuting based on jelly beans, how much time you spend sleeping based on jelly beans. So they show, you know, however many thousands of jelly beans it is. And then they start sorting them out. This is how many jelly beans are dedicated to sleeping and commuting and this and that and that and that. And they break it down, you know, how many jelly beans are dedicated to work. And they break it down, and it really gives you kind of a unique perspective. And are you ready for just a tidbit of inside thing? Every time I watch this video, it makes me kind of emotional.
Really?
Yeah. So watch the video. And so that's my response. If it's something you enjoy, something you're passionate about, you know, suck it up, Fluffy, and do it.
And just do it. Because there's going to be no right time.
There's never going to be a right
something
time.
Something always is going to sacrifice. It's just a matter of what you can sacrifice at that point in your life, whether it's, you know, you're spending a little bit less time with your family or you're reshifting your priorities to have less of a social life, you know, and I'm going to sound like grandma over here. But, you know, the other thing, too, is if you're financially looking towards making this move, you're giving yourself a little bit of a cushion, hopefully, that what's the worst that happens? It doesn't work out and you have to find an actual job with an employer. Well, then, you know, and you've proved to yourself whether or not it's a viable lifestyle for you.
Or if it doesn't work out, worst case scenario, here's another one for you. It didn't work out for me originally. Mm-hmm. And so Christy and I ended up moving in with my parents. And it was short term, but it's just, it was a sacrifice and it's just something that you do.
But you have to be willing to make a sacrifice, I think, to really give yourself a go at a lot of things in life.
Right. And you can't be a quitter. I mean, patience, we talked about patience recently. You can't be a quitter. You've got to have the patience to make it happen. But you just have, I mean, if you're really passionate about it and you really, if it's all you're thinking about, I mean, then do it. If it's something you're going, you know, I think that would be cool. If it's anything like, you know, I think, then don't do it because you're not really motivated. You're really not dedicated. You're just a dreamer and continue to dream and, you know, whatever.
A pipe dream is a lot different than an action to build a business.
Right. So I hope we gave some word of advice, but do look for the jelly bean video. Samantha, there's going to be a quiz on that jelly bean video.
Well, I'm going to watch it because you also mentioned that it has jelly beans in it. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I am a jelly bean connoisseur.
I know. And yeah, we'll have to talk about here. Yeah,
we'll leave that for maybe Easter or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. But if you're like Megan and you have a question for us but can't join us live on the Business Breakdown, you can still ask your question to us. There are three ways you can interact with Paul and I on the show. You can give us a call at 855-POTRATS, and we'd love to hear from you there. Or join our conversation on Facebook, which is the Paul Potratz page, or visit paulpotratz.com, where you can send us an email, check out the free resources, sign up for an upcoming webinar, or more information over there for you to check out. And that's it for this week's episode of the Business Breakdown. So earlier in the show, we were talking about fight or flight and how that really is a cause of stress and an environmental factor in a business aside from a physiological factor.
Well, it creates a lot of turnover. It creates a negative feeling. I mean, we talked about all of that. But, you know, what I think is what you really, the takeaway, one of the biggest takeaways is you've, as a business owner, as a manager, or as an individual working for a company, you've got to find the right company. And, you know, find the right company, but you also have to find the right team members to get on your team. And, because it is critically important. I mean, you think about companies, I'll give you a couple companies, for example, General Electric and Microsoft. Do you have any idea what they do in their staffing, what's part of their protocol in their staffing that they do every year?
Don't they look for top performers and bottom performers, and then they kind of let go a certain percentage of them?
Right. So, for example, one of the things, if you've read any of the books, you know, that it said that they would let go the bottom 10% of their employees.
I'm glad you said the statistics. I was going to say 25.
Yeah, I think it was bottom 10%, but I'm not positive.
But a percentage of their team members, they're reviewing.
Yeah. And, you know, and I don't know if it's necessarily because that kind of goes into the fight or flight mode, because then you know that's going to happen. But, you know, it is driving top performance for the company. And I mean, you look at Microsoft. Microsoft has more cash revenue than the Treasury now. I think it's $197 billion, which is, cash is a bad thing for a company, according to Warren Buffett. But that's a whole other side topic.
Squirrel.
Yeah, for real. No doubt.
But it's the company you keep and the company you work for, essentially, right, is what you're saying too. And then how we look at individuals in our organization and how they're performing. And so you actually have an upcoming webinar about that.
Right. And the reason that the webinar, because I've received so many calls, as you have. I mean, how many times do we have that conversation? I need more employees. I'm not getting any resumes. I need more resumes. And this needs to be an ongoing thing for a company that you always have to be recruiting. But if you're recruiting the way you did 5 years ago or 3 years ago or 10 years ago, you're recruiting old school ways.
And there's a difference between recruiting and hiring.
Exactly. So you kind of think about that. I mean, so if you're trying to bring individuals in for your company and you're running ads in the newspaper, if you're running ads on, you know, the class on the different classified websites, mm-hmm, or if you think you're being really creative and running ads on Craigslist, or you're paying, you know, hundreds, thousands of dollars to be on those job boards, mm-hmm, or if you have a recruiter in place, just think about how much money you're spending and think about the caliber of those.
That's quite an investment.
It's a big investment. And how many of those individuals, what's your return? How many of those individuals are you really hiring and how long do they stay with your company? So, and we've talked about that. The turnover in your company is massive. So the webinar that we have coming up, mm-hmm, is how to recruit and retain top talent. And we're just going to share, well, you know what we're going to share. We're going to share what we have our clients do and what we do to be able to recruit new employees.
And give you, you mentioned, you know, if you were using the newspaper or Craigslist, we're going to take that and give you the modern day implementation of that strategy. So individuals who attend this webinar will walk away with actionable items that they can use in their business to recruit. And I think that's a really important word, recruit top team members, as well as retain them.
Right. And this webinar too, it's for the business owner. It's for the upper management. It's not necessarily for HR directors. I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't want to be confrontational, but as a business owner, or as upper management, you need to know what's going on. If you are sitting back and depending on your HR director to do this.
Well, and I think one of the strategies too that we're going to talk about, and not to give anything away before the webinar, is you as a business owner hold a certain caliber for this recruiting strategy that your HR director won't be able to bring to it.
Exactly.
For one of the takeaways we're going to give. And honestly, part of that was something that we learned because we went on and did it ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a huge difference. I mean, you think about that. If you have an HR director, granted, a lot of companies, I mean, they have to have massive size to have an HR director. And it seems like generally companies that are, you know, $10 to $12 million and below do not have HR directors, you know, $10 to $12 million in revenue. But it's part of the strategy is knowing how to do it as the business owner and leading your team in a different way to be able to bring more individuals on that's going to help your team grow. So you always, always, always have to be recruiting, need to be hiring, because you're only as good as your mm-hmm team. I mean, it's as simple as that.
And you made the point of needing to know what's going on and being able to do it yourself. The benefit of that is it's going to give you the opportunity to do that and see how you can have other team members help you succeed at it. So we've talked a lot about what the webinar is going to be about, but it's going to be August 24th at 3 p.m.
Yes.
So to be able to sign up, where should our audience go and sign up for that webinar? Again, August 24th at 3 p.m.
Right. So sign up's going to be on where is it going to be? On paulpotratz.com is where it will be. So there you go. It's going to be on paulpotratz.com. So Paul and then P-O-T-R-A-T-Z.
And
spell that.
Paul doesn't know about this, but I'm going to give our listeners a special offer. So if you Facebook direct message me, I will give you a coupon code to sign up for free. I can only limit that to the first 10 people.
Whoa.
So take
you're
advantage
giving it away
of that.
Free?
Yeah, well, he didn't know about that, guys. For once, I'm throwing something at you.
Boy, I tell you what. Okay, don't give away many though. So
just a few. But go ahead and direct message us over on Facebook. You can find me with Samantha Zavalinsky on Facebook, and we will go ahead and give one a couple.
Like they're going to be able to spell that, Sam.
Well, that's why they get it for free. They have to do a little work.
Oh my gosh, Samantha, what?
Well, technically it's Samantha Cunningham Zavalinsky on Facebook. But yeah. Go ahead and sign up for the webinar. We hope to see you attend that. And you'll also get a recording after it goes live so you can put all of those items into actionable steps for your business. And that webinar is August 24th at 3 p.m.
And if you want to figure out how to spell Samantha's name, just go to my website, paulpotratz.com. It's there. Then you have to go to Facebook and find her, connect with her, and send her a message. So there you go.
So do a little homework, and you'll get something for free out of it. But that's all we have time for in the Paul Potratz Show today. We talked about fight or flight, and we had some great conversations in the business breakdown. If you missed any of today's episode, you can find us over at paulpotratz.com and continue the conversation on our Facebook page. That's under Paul Potratz. We look forward to seeing you next week.
You've been listening to The Paul Potratz Show. Paul is the architect behind Potratz Advertising, an international consulting and advertising agency based in Schenectady, New York.
For more info or to learn how to work with Paul and the Potratz team to grow your business and improve your processes, visit paulpotratz.com. That's Paul, P-O-T-R-A-T-Z.com.
And join Paul and Samantha next Sunday morning at 11, right here on WGY.